The IMG Roadmap is the only podcast dedicated to coaching international medical graduates and success blueprints for this unique pathway. I am Dr. Nina Loom, your host, a previous IMG turned hospital medicine physician, healthcare administrator, speaker, and coach. I empower, encourage, and equip you with actionable steps that you can take towards the residency position of your dreams.
Hi, guys. Welcome to another episode of the IMG Roadmap Podcast. Today's guest is a pediatrician who has advanced training in child advocacy, and she's a phenomenal lady. I'll let her introduce herself. Dr. Maria, welcome to the podcast. Can you tell us about yourself?
Thank you, Nina. Thank you for having me here today. It's a great honor, and I congratulate you on this podcast. I think there's a lot of IMGs that will benefit from all the information that you're putting out there. So thank you so much.
We are honored to have you here today. And I've seen a lot of your inspiration as well on the internet through Instagram. So it's such an honor to have you here. We'd just like to know a little bit, like tell us your name, what country you're from, where you practice now.
Okay, so my name is Dr. Maria Gabriela Aramburu, and I am from Panama. Originally, I was born and raised in Panama, and now I am in Washington, D.C. I practice in MedStar Georgetown University Hospital as an attending physician for pediatrics. I did my medical school in Mexico and then a lot of steps, but I came here for my residency in pediatrics, and I ended up staying. I've been in the D.C. area for 10 years now, going on 11.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. That's a long time. And congratulations on all that you've done and achieved so far. So can you give us a little bit of background, what your medical studies in Mexico was like, maybe what school, if you don't mind, and talk a little bit about that structure?
Yes, of course. So I actually, I finished high school in Panama, and then I had like a summer that I had off. So I started volunteering in a hospital there, a children's hospital there. And I actually had already applied for college in the U.S. and I was slated to come here, and I didn't know that I wanted to go into medical school at all. So I actually did a year of freshman college here in the U.S. and it was actually in Washington, D.C. in Georgetown University. And then when I was here for college, I also volunteered at the hospital, at Georgetown Hospital, where I work now, in the child life department. So that's when I really found my passion for medicine and decided to know that if I wanted to do medicine, it was better to do it in my own primary language and to do it somewhere where I could continue to do my social service and everything in my home country, because my plan was to end up practicing there. So I actually then went to Mexico and started from scratch med school. So the structure there is a six-year program, and you start right away with the medical school classes. So like anatomy, you do biochemistry, you do all that, but you go straight in med school. You don't have to do the 4 years. So that was great for me at that time, because I really, when I knew what I wanted to start now. I didn't want to wait or do anything else. I was like really passionate about it. So I loved having that structure where we had like the lecture classes, and then we had like a little practicum, and then we had like these group classes. And there in Mexico, we also had like our medical like internships where we would go practice in rural areas from the first year of med school. So it's really hands-on, and you get exposed to the medicine, the practicing doctors and everything like really early on. Then after you finish the 4 years of the basic sciences, you can opt for the last 2 years, which are the practical years where you're doing like your, let's say your AI, you can do that elsewhere. So I actually did part of that year at University of Miami, Jackson Memorial. And there I did several rotations. I also did 1 month at Georgetown Hospital in endocrinology. So they allow you for a lot of like, you know, externships and stuff like that. And then the rest of that practical year, I did it in Panama. So they have partnership with the hospital where you can go elsewhere and then get evaluated, and that counts towards your diploma. So I did a variety of places for my last 2 years, including US and Panama. I think that was really helpful just to get exposed to the US system early. And then I went back to Panama and finished my career in the six-year program. I then went on, I wanted to go back to Panama, and I wanted to do, they have a required social services year, which is 2 years. So I wanted to get that done before I did my specialty, because I didn't want to have anything hanging, you know, anything like requirements that I still need to do to get my medical license in Panama. So I went back home to do those 2 years of working in rural areas there.
Wow.
That was before going into PEDS. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really very extensive training there. So can you just walk us into, maybe tell us a little bit more about your transition to the U.S.? Like, what was that process for you being from Panama, having, you know, you went to medical school in Mexico, you went back to Panama, and then you finally find yourself in the U.S. How was that transition? What are some things that, especially for the listener who may have a similar path as you, maybe you went to school in Mexico or in South America or Central America, and they're looking to transition. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Nina, because I had different colleagues of mine do different things. So I can talk about my experience and then kind of mention the options of what other people did, but I know how my experience worked for me. So when I finished med school in Mexico, I had already had set my mind that I wanted to do my specialty in the U.S. So that's key if you want to do your specialty in the U.S., like kind of like make your mind up with that early, because what I did was like, while I was in my second year of vet school, I started studying for step one and just like kind of like powered through. And there was like a summer break, I would use it to study, and I got the books. And then during that second year summer break, I actually came to DC again. Something was bringing me back to DC, and did the Kaplan course. So the Kaplan course is an intensive course for step one, step two that they have. And you do like, I think it's like 3 weeks. I don't remember, but you do everyday classes. So I did that during one summer, and that helped me tremendously, especially because I was still in med school. So everything was fresh from the first 2 years of the basic sciences. So that helped me do step one. I did step one right away. So I already, when I graduated med school, I had step one under my belt. And then some people might decide to go, if they study in Mexico or Caribbean, to go like straight to residency, especially if they've done the steps. But I had decided that I wanted to do this 2-year rural experience, also to rotate to all the specialties and really, really know if pediatrics is what I wanted. So I did these 2 years in Panama, just working in rural areas where you work in OBGYN, you work in surgery, you work in internal medicine, you rotate through all the specialties, and you have a lot of hands-on time. Also ER and pediatrics, of course. And during those 2 years, in my free time, I would study for step two. And I thought it was a great combination because I was actually rotating through all the specialties and starting for my step two. So that was great. I have some friends that actually did go straight to residency after med school, even though they're from Panama. And that's because they had set their minds that they probably wanted to stay and practice in the U.S. And that was a good strategy too, because obviously they got finished earlier. But the benefit of if you're from Panama and you have to do those requirements, or I know some other South American countries have those requirements, is that you will always have the doors open to come back to your country, and you don't have to do that after you're specialized. Because when you're specialized, for example, in Panama, if you're specialized, they'll make you do those 2 years, but as a specialist, but you have to practice like a general physician. So it's kind of hard if you're like a dermatologist or a cardiologist, and you're having to do general medicine. And I know people that have not returned to their country because they're like, oh no, I'm a neurosurgeon now, so I'm not going to go to, you know, rural work in just primary care.
Yeah, right.
So that's a consideration. Like, what are your plans and can those change? If those change, then get the basics done first. And it's a good experience because when I went to interview in the U.S., actually people were very interested in hearing how was my experience, you know, working on my own with these difficult cases, long hours, etc. So I was kind of already prepped for residency in that way. Yeah. And then I became, in Panama, there's also a Kaplan. So since I had done, you know, the step one course with them, and I had a lot of knowledge of how their books and their systems worked, I started during those 2 years, I also worked for Kaplan as a consultant, medical consultant. So I was actually giving like tutoring med students in Panama that wanted to study for the boards, and they didn't know where to start or how to do it. So I would do consulting sessions with them to get them in a study plan, to get them going. And then while I was doing that, like in exchange for those consulting, they gave me the courses for free for step two. So I would go in video and do the Kaplan courses for step two, and I was studying for my step two. And at the end of those 2 years, I did my step two.
Wow.
So then I was ready, and then I did the CS when I was like starting to apply and everything. I did the clinical skills, which is a step two clinical skills, and then I applied. Yeah.
Wow.
So pediatrics.
Yeah. So I just to point out a few things that I heard, and for the person listening, you know, we want to give them some strong key points. You know, one thing was while you were in medical school, you took step one. So you did not wait to complete medical school to start working on USMLE. Is that right?
Exactly. That's correct. And that's one of my strong recommendations, actually, because a lot of people that wait, I mean, it's a lot of information and you're busy and you're also doing the two languages, right? So I would try to study early and then incorporate it into your studies. Like if you're doing a class, then having a first aid, a step one first aid or something that's kind of complementing that in the English language. And going through questions, because also I would say the structure in the in medical schools of the testing that they do in Latin American medical school is different than the structure of the U.S. The structure of the U.S., you're always doing the tests, like multiple choice, like the steps, and for us it's different. So you have to start training your brain on how to analyze those type of questions. So I think it's key to do it during med school, even if you have to sacrifice a lot of weekends.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I always tell people this, when you're studying longitudinally, like you're learning one thing in school, and then you're seeing it again while you prepare for basic sciences or for the USMLE step one. So really what you're doing is you're reinforcing a lot of the material because it's simultaneous with what you're actually learning in your medical school. I think that really helps people, especially for people that tend to perform higher, is that it's not been so long since they took classes that were tested on the basic sciences or in step one, like anatomy, physio, biochem, and the like of it. The further away that I notice that IMGs are from doing anatomy, physio, biochem, molecular, and all these things, the poorer they perform on the test, if that makes any sense. So what I'm saying is, it's best if you plan ahead. It's best if you start studying early on, guys. So really, that's the take-home point. Always start your studies as soon as you know you will be pursuing any type of training in the U.S. So even if you have a thought of pursuing the training, but you're not certain, you're better off starting early. And then the next thing that you pointed out, which I really liked, was, you know, you had a backup plan. Your plan was, I'm always going to want to practice in Panama. And so even if I'm working on the U.S. plan, I still have something else that I'm securing, right? Like I'm going to still do my 2 years of public service that's required of me so that I can always fall back to training and practicing here. So I think a lot of times some IMGs forego that plan B or don't even make a plan B, and then they end up, you know, having to wait a year or 2 years before they match, and then that creates a gap in their schedule. But you instead took that time, worked on securing your Panama medical license. In the meantime, started working with Kaplan as a tutor, as a counselor for Kaplan, while studying for step two. So you were consistent in some academic activity. You were staying clinically relevant, filling your time up with scholarly activity. I think that's something that's important for IMGs to hear today, is the path to your success really speaks to starting early, working hard from the beginning, having a goal and setting a goal, setting deadlines, and then even during that process, having plan B and doing more than one thing, but fully devoted to it. So I think those are some key points that I just wanted to take home today as they listen. So thanks for those points. That's really good.
Definitely. And actually, to your point of securing a plan B, because I had done the internship and everything to secure my Panama license, when I finished those 2 years of social service, I was so busy doing that and studying for step two that I didn't apply that year. So I actually landed a job in like just a private practice doing GP work, like you did GP in the UK. So I was seeing patients, like adult patients, for wellness visits, for preventive medicine. And I had a job while I was applying for residency. So I applied, you know, say that year by, you know, September, October, November. And then when I got my acceptances for interviews, I started interviewing like that January. I interviewed like at the until end January. So that was good because I still had that to come back to while, you know, while waiting to see if I got in.
Right, right, definitely. So just to give us some advice and maybe just tell us a little bit first about where you trained in DC and any additional fellowship training background that you have.
Yes, absolutely. So when I went in the interview trail, I had my eyes on DC because I had so much history and I knew I liked the city, but I interviewed, you know, several places, and actually Georgetown was my top choice, and I got in the match to my top choice. But I think for the interview process, it's important to look at programs that are interested in matching IMGs. They express, you know, interest during the interview, like you make that connection, and then following up. So at Georgetown, it's a small program. They take 10 residents a year for pediatrics and 2 for med peds. I like that about the program. And I also liked that they had a global health track. So I was very interested in global health at the time. I made that known in my interview. I also made it known that I was interested in adolescent health and what projects I had done with adolescent health, because I had done a research project that we had published in the Journal of Adolescent Health Medicine. And immediately that got me connections there. So I connected with the division chief for adolescent medicine, followed up with her. So it's good to have an area of interest, even though you don't know if you're going to do a specialty or not, because that creates connections with certain people in the program. And that, you know, I don't know if that helped me match, but it helped me when I was in the program to already have those connections. That's why I chose Georgetown. I did take use of the Global Health Track. My 3 years of training, I did 1 medical mission to Peru as a global health experience. And then I did another medical mission it was just a rotation away, and it was in Australia. So I did those 2. And then in Australia, I actually went to one of the conferences there and presented a project. So it was very fruitful. And that's also part of what you were saying, Ina, kind of like planning in advance and having your goals, because my goal was to learn as much as possible for global health, to have some impact there, to do some adolescent medicine stuff. So in Australia, I did a rotation in adolescent health. And then, you know, the 3 years went by. I was thinking of doing an adolescent health specialty fellowship, and I was all set up for that. But I had also enjoyed my rotation during residency in community peds a lot. So I applied for the fellowship in adolescent medicine. I actually got in D.C., but at the end of the day, I matched for Children's National Adolescent Program. But at the end of the day, because I had met my husband and I was planning to stay here, I had a J-1 visa, and a lot of IMGs will experience that. There's 2 types of visa. I don't know if you talk about that in other podcasts, but the J-1 visa, if you want to stay in the U.S., you have to do a waiver. And because of that waiver that I had to do, I had to work 3 years under underserved areas. So I figured if I did the adolescent health specialty fellowship, I wouldn't be able to stay in the area. And my husband said here. So I had to think about my family goals as well at that point. So I kind of declined the adolescent fellowship and thought I'd just practice for my waiver here in DC in some underserved, fairly qualified centers or something like that. I'll just look for a job. When I started that process, this fellowship actually at Georgetown opened up, which was the Community Pediatrics and Child Advocacy Fellowship. And I was interviewing with the chairman of the division for a job in a rural area, that we have some hospitals in rural areas here that qualify for the waiver. I was interviewing for that position, and he said, you know, but I have something else that might interest you. I said, what? And he said, well, the fellowship just opened up because the fellow had to move. I said, okay, I'll think about it. So I thought about that and interviewed also with the fellowship director and went through that process. And then when they offered me that fellowship, I thought, you know, it was perfect, because actually I could do the fellowship and my waiver at the same time. So because the fellowship was community peds and child advocacy, it was community work. So it was in the areas that were qualified for that. So I was able to do kind of like 2 things at the same time.
Wow.
So that's when I did the fellowship. Yeah, I did the fellowship for 3 years, community pediatrics and child advocacy, which included a master's in public health. So as part of the fellowship, they paid for the master's, which I didn't know I wanted to do, but kind of like the opportunity opened up, and why not, right? I did the master's in public health, which was great because I did it with a focus on global health and childhood nutrition, which was part of my interest. So it kind of, everything lined up.
Yeah, it worked out after all.
The path
Yeah, I had a J1 as well, so I understand exactly what you mean. And for those who are listening who are wondering about the J1, mm-hmm. if you have to have a J1, it's not the end of the world. You can still have your career. You just must complete the underserved requirement that has been stipulated for us. And that's usually 3 years in what is considered a healthcare shortage area called an HSA, or a medical underserved area, an MUA. So you can find that even in big cities sometimes, that you may be associated with like the public health department or some kind of community work, or you can find that in smaller rural areas. So don't be threatened by the fact that you need a J1 visa. I actually am very thankful that I had a J1 visa at the end of the day. But, you know, it's just become, I think sometimes when people are terrified about it. Has that been your experience when you talk to others?
Yeah, and I did. I mean, it's hard to see that process, like after you've been through so many processes, to think now I have to go through one more process. But I think I've seen success with IMGs that have had J1 to be, like you said, like a blessing in disguise. Sometimes you can get, like my friends that were, they were a couple and they needed to find a J1 waiver position as a couple. And they found like this beautiful town in California where, you know, it's rural, but it's beautiful. And they get paid more than a normal pediatrician would, you know, kind of like getting out. So for them, it worked out because they didn't need to be anywhere specific and they went together to this place.
Right.
Or if you're by yourself or you don't have a couple yet, you don't have a partner yet. Like if I hadn't met my husband at that point and was engaged, I would have been happy to explore a new place, you know. But I had this commitment, so I tried to do something here, and it did work out. And it worked out that because I stayed and I did the fellowship, then I have my position now, which I love, which is I'm an attending physician at Georgetown, but I work in community pediatrics.
Yeah.
It kind of worked out, and I always liked working with underserved, so that's what I wanted to do anyway. It's not like I ever wanted to be like in private practice or anything like that. Like my calling was to work with underserved, so it was in line with my interest as well. And if it's not in line with your interest, you always will benefit from that experience.
Right, right, right. Yeah. So align your goals, IMGs. What she's saying is, what Dr. Maria is saying is align your goals with your interest, with your calling, with your purpose. And it makes it just a little bit more enjoyable. So thank you so much for joining us. As we round up, do you have any final words of advice for somebody else that's looking at you now saying, man, you know, she's a pediatrician, she's completed fellowship, she's living a best life out in DC. How do we get there? What do we hold on to know that this is possible for us? What are some really strong points that you want to leave us with?
I would say try to look at the positive in the process. So enjoy the process. For example, I try to align everything that was really, really hard that I had to do with positive experiences. For example, I have to go to Kaplan. Okay, I'm going to go to a beautiful city in DC and there I have family. So I'll have enjoyable moments with that. And then I was doing my rotation. I was like, okay, it's beautiful weather. Let me bike there because I don't have a set schedule. So I can bike to the Barnes & Noble and study all day, but also will have some balance and do some workout. Like I tell some of my med students that I mentor is, it's very long and it's a lot of things that you have to do. So don't stop living life and don't say, I have to shut myself down for these 13 years and not have a life because then I'm going to have it. No, you have to keep living your life, enjoying the moments and making the best of the sacrifices that you have to make. No summers, missing weddings, missing events. Prioritize which ones are worth missing and then try to kind of structure things around what other things are important to you. So at the end of the day, when you get to your goals, you won't see like, I suffered all that, you know, finally I'm here. No, I enjoyed the process of getting here because I had to, for example, do my rural years in Panama. Well, I chose a place that I would like and, you know, went there and enjoyed that. And I had like, for a couple of months, a beach town where I worked at. And then I would go every afternoon running the beach. Or in residency, it's really hard and it's a lot of hours of work. But I said, since the beginning, since I interviewed, I wanted to have my global health experience. So that shaped what program I chose. And the fact that since day one, you know, I knew I wanted to do a global health experience, I started working towards that. And then the stars will align for that to happen for you.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for joining us on the IMG Roadmap podcast. We're so delighted that you came on to share these valuable points with us. and we appreciate your time and we support everything that you're doing. But, you know, some people are going to want to connect with you, Dr. Maria. Where can they find you? Can you tell us where to meet you on the internet? How do we connect with you?
Yeah, the best way of connecting with me right now is at my Instagram page. It's at pediatricsmom, PediatricsMom, and then mom, M-O-M. And in my page, I kind of share topics on parenting and pediatric topics and like life as a working mom and a pediatrician mom. And there I take DMs. So I can, especially for IMGs, if they want some advice or some guidance, I can respond to DMs pretty quickly. So I think that's the best way right now. And then there's also a link for my email in that Instagram page. So either way is good and we can connect there.
All right. Thanks, guys. I'll put all her information in the show notes so you can contact her. You can connect with her and continue to be inspired. Thank you so much.
Hey, IMG. I know you've been looking forward to this information, but I'm coming by to tell you that finally, the doors open for the IMG Roadmap course on April 5th, 2020. That's Monday, April 5th, 2020. And class starts on April 19th, 2020. So you can go right now to imgroadmap.com/p/p2020 to sign up right this moment. Guys, we have limited seats available. If you want to be a part of this 6-week life coaching program with me, you have to do it right away. I'll see you guys on the other side.